Okay, Lee, here we go with the second part of the questions. And I'm going to go till close to five, then I got to take a break. And if there's some left, I'll get them tomorrow. Seeking can be a lifetime quest. Do we ever become finders? Isn't that great? We're actually finding the entire time we're seeking. The mentality of seeking is such a gift to shift from where our will normally takes us to seeking God, that almost the decision to seek is a gift. And there's nothing to find at the end, like the pot at the end of the rainbow. Because it's eternal, and it's its own gift. So the finding is in the seeking. It is happening at the same time. Now, if we have expectations that it should be more than we appear to have, then we want to get rid of the expectations for more so that you can be grateful for what you have. But we never get to, now I got it. What's the most important thing to know and understand about Alcoholics Anonymous? Oh, boy. Wow. Now, this is a question that if I was asked this question every 5 years of my sobriety, you would have had a different answer. And I think the old timers in here would agree with that. At the end of 5 years, you would have had this answer and that answer and this answer and that answer. And so today, I would say that the most important thing to know and understand is to realize there's nothing to know and understand. If you could get rid of the desire to know and understand, you'd be 90% home. There's only something to be experienced, and the experience can't even be put into words correctly or adequately for someone else to understand and know it, which is why all spirituality is generally discussed with stories. And that's why speaker meetings are so powerful. When a person gets up and tells their story, they have delivered the message of God by telling their story. Because the new person looks and goes, there's no way that person went from there to there where they are now, what I can see in front of me, without something miraculous happening to them. Now, do they understand what they just saw? No. Do they know what it is? No. But they experienced it. So we end up wanting to know or understand. We end up ending wanting to know or understand anything because it goes nowhere. And you could almost substitute in our description of God, God as I experience him, which is really closer than understanding. We understand God from the experience, but the experience is enough. We just experience God because it's a complete mystery. You can understand it. And so we get rid of the need to understand or know anything. Just experience this weekend. That's what everybody's doing. They're just having the experience of a lifetime, meeting and talking and doing all this. And then you go home and you tell people, this was just amazing. And then you try to explain it, and they'll go, yeah, I'm glad you had a good time. Yeah. Oh, I love this. I upset myself constantly. Can you help me? Well, let's see. Perhaps I could assist you in upsetting yourself intermittently. Why is that such a good question? Everybody in the room's eyes lit up. I upset myself constantly. Is that in our literature? Is that sentence? Of course it is. Our problems are of our own making. That is our nature. That is the building material that we constructed our own lives with, thinking. And that's where we live. And the lecture tomorrow will cover all that. Can I stop upsetting myself? Yes and no. You cannot stop your mind from trying to upset you, but you can stop listening and learn how to quietly detach from your own thinking through periods of silence and letting everything be as it is, and all of the techniques that you might find in reflective, contemplative, meditative books, teachers, whatever. That whole area is to free us from the power of our thoughts. You can't stop that thing from just ram up there. But if it becomes background noise, you're really free of it. So yes, that is a top priority. All right? When people say, I'm sober through the grace of God, does that infer that people who can't seem to get sober have not received God's grace? Does anybody feel Scott Redmond in the room on this question? What was his story out in Los Angeles? The earthquake came and this guy's house fell down, and that guy's house was okay. And the guy in the okay house was saying, through the grace of God, my house stood there. And Scott said, yeah, and God looked at the Jew and crushed his house. Implying that the grace is selective in some way. If someone says it, they're trying to say, they're trying to thank God for their sobriety. And the choice of words may sound like they were singled out for the gift of sobriety and someone else wasn't. And to answer that question of why are we in the 10% that got to come into this society is impossible, because none of us deserved it over the people who don't make it. And so we have a tremendous responsibility to expand this gift. And everybody here tries to do that. They try to carry it to another alcoholic. And maybe someday we will understand why we were the ones that are in the middle of all this joy. I do know this, that if people didn't die, it would be hard to convey fatal illness. And And unless you're convinced it's a fatal illness, you're not going to do all this stuff. So they are just as big heroes as the rest of us. And they were just killed in combat, and we survived. But we all were fighting the same war, and we should thank them for their lives, because that's what saved us. If I didn't see somebody get hammered by this thing every so often, I might think they're putting different chemicals in the booze. And after 40 years, maybe the manufacturers got rid of that bad part that screwed up my system, et cetera, et cetera. So it's important that the reality of alcoholism is understood by everybody, that it is this wonderful life or death thing, and we can be grateful for all those that fought the battle and died, and they didn't do anything wrong. They were just the soldiers that had to get killed, and we can do a lot in their honor to expand this. How do you turn something over to God? I would say the first thing is to be willing. Examine whether you're willing, or are you holding back? Ask your sponsor if he thinks you're willing. Do you think I'm really willing to let this go? A lot of times you're going to find out that you're pretending that you're willing, and you're hoping that it doesn't get taken. Because you're still getting some pleasure out of it. You're still getting some enjoyment out of it. To be entirely willing means to totally get rid of it. And total is a lot. The talks I give on the sixth step is, I always like to pick on lust as a lead one in a male audience. How'd you like to be 100% free of lust? I don't see any hands. How about having some of the lust removed? Yeah, I want some of it. Yeah, I'd like some of it. All of it? God was going to... I don't know what you thought, but I said, what is that, like being dead? No lust? So it's, if I complained that God hadn't removed the lust, my sponsor might well say, are you willing? Well, almost. I'm almost willing. So I would check with willingness. That is probably the key thing. Because once we're entirely ready and are willing to go through the pain of having it removed, it'll go. It's absolute guarantee it'll be gone. So you don't want to sit there going, God doesn't want this gone yet. The resistance is not coming from God. It's coming from us that we don't really want it to be gone. We don't want our lives entirely run by God. That's a huge act of spirituality. Okay. Boy, that's good. Prayer, meditation, and self-examination will provide an unshakable foundation for life. Question: what's the importance of self-examination in our spiritual journey? Crucial. We got two steps on it, right? Two inventory steps. And what's the best way? What's the essential part of self-examination? I mean, that we've learned in AA. Running it by someone else. That's how you validate it. You can't self-examine without running it by someone else. It won't work. Absolutely out of the question. Can't be done. You cannot see the truth about yourself by yourself. Has to be run by someone else. So that is the value of self-examination. It is validated by running it by someone else. And the fifth, and what what we find out is two points of view bring out the third dimension like 3D movies. It takes two images. And that's why our sponsor or whoever our advisor is will always be able to add something to the perspective that we already have. If it's exactly the same of ours, then it validates that we were on target for once. But self-examination is huge because we're battling our ego's ability to distort and disguise and rationalize and all of that. So it's absolutely crucial. How do I acquire conscious contact? Well, obviously, surrender. That was the beginning ticket to give up, give up, give up. You want conscious contact? Take your handkerchief out. I give up. I surrender. I give up. I give up. Unconditionally, I surrender. We have to remove everything that is blocking us from contact. It's like cleaning your car won't start, so you go out and you look at the battery. Oh, my God, you remember that? And then they take all the corrosion off, put the contact back on. And that's the corrosion, our character defects. As soon as they're removed, the contact is there. It's waiting, just like the battery. It's waiting. All the power's there. The wiring is perfect. The crud is preventing it from happening. So there's the contact's just waiting for the contact points to be cleaned. Guaranteed. Boom, it'll start every time. The statement on page 20, our very lives as ex-problem drinkers depends on our constant thought of others and how we may help meet their needs. When does this happen? Every day when I leave my house, I say this is in prayer form. Please help me to meet the needs of everyone I meet today. But it's amazing how little this enters my thoughts after that. Well, now we don't. I may be misreading this a little bit, but it sounds overambitious. How can I meet the needs of everyone I meet today? The basic need of everyone is for love. So we got to remember that. Forget all this other stuff, and I'm needy for this and needy for that. We don't supply that. We don't meet those needs. The basic need of everyone is love. If I am connected to God and act with love, you're in. That's it. You can't make it any simpler than that. And so as we go through the day, were the people that we came in contact with better off or worse off after we left? And if you treated them with respect and love, they are way better off. When you go into the dry cleaners to get your suit for your daughter's wedding and they've lost it, and you try to understand the clerk's position and don't blow up, and say, never mind, I'll wear another one and I'll pick it up next week. You made her day. Because she didn't lose it. She has to be the one to tell you that it's lost. And if you are able to pull off something like that, you'll understand the power of love and understanding others. And that can be with a waitress. It can be with people in traffic. It can be with your boss, a coworker, everywhere. It's... can you bring love into every situation? That is, it's so simple, and it'll make your day fly. You'll come home at night so happy, and it's so simple. And we don't like simple. Would you give us a brief example of a conversation you might have with a sponsee who came to you with a problem, marriage, not enough money, etc.? As I told you earlier, my job is to convince him that he doesn't have a problem. What is the definition of a problem? Something that disturbs you. My job is to show him that this doesn't have to disturb him. That's what I want. I'm not going to solve it. I'm going to show him that it doesn't have to disturb him. And I go, well, you've been, did you eat today? When's the last time you didn't have a meal? When's the last time you didn't have a ride to a meeting? Don't you agree that as long as you're fed and you keep going to meetings, you're actually okay? Do you believe that people in AA will help you if you end up needing a room for a while, or if you need this, if you need that? Don't you realize that you're going to be all right no matter what happens? Can you go home and pray to be undisturbed by the current situation instead of praying for the money? Can you pray to be undisturbed without the money? So you can see where a problem is simply being disturbed. It's not. Some people are so good with adversity, they hardly bring it up. Oh, this will work its way out. I envy them. They're wonderful. And we ought to take lessons from them. I used to criticize those people and think that they were brain damaged. Don't they know they're supposed to be? Don't they know they're supposed to be freaking out? What's wrong with him? Geez, he just got fired and he's going to go visit somebody in the hospital. So the conversation I have is to show how it's not mandatory to be upset. That's it. And when you're not upset and you are the channel's open, very often either a coincidence will happen or it will occur to you that your uncle said to call him if you ever had a job thing. Do you follow what I'm saying? In other words, the help is there. We're just not connected with it. The solution is waiting for us to be spiritually fit to hear it. And so eliminating the disturbance solves everything. That's the only part of the problem that needs working on. If it isn't bothering you, it isn't a problem. Okay? Oh. Yeah, thanks. Why does it seem so easy to lose spirituality? Well, our nature when we came here is to pay no attention to that. We've been programmed and wired to be self-sufficient, to pay attention to the news, to keep track of all the problems, et cetera, et cetera. And spirituality is to disregard all that. And so becoming unspiritual is easy as turning on the news. For me, it's going to Las Vegas. I get off the plane in Las Vegas and a spiritual vacuum cleaner starts sucking me dry. As I hit the city, it's one huge character defect walking around. And so it's easy to see how easy it is to lose it. And so in my case, I would be ready for that when I arrive. I would know that that is what is likely to happen and just not allow it. Just don't be relaxed as I land there and think that I'm fine. Of course it's easy. It's the easiest thing in the world. And that's why we start in the morning, contact with God. We say a prayer. We say a little prayer during the day. We go to a meeting at noon. We're in contact with others. It is quite an undertaking to remain spiritual in a material world. It's not something that comes naturally. I find it hardest to first wake up. What is your morning ritual for surrendering to the presence of God? I'm glad you asked that question, because if I didn't have to sleep, I could stay in great spiritual shape. My ego takes advantage of me being asleep to completely screw me up during the night. And when I wake up, it's awful. It has done a number on me. I don't know what it does, but it just goes in there and goes, don't forget, everything's all screwed up. When you wake up, you're back to 1962 when I was going towards the nut ward, and everybody hates you. You're a piece of crap. So when I open my eyes, that's what I first see. And the funny thing is, if I get out of bed, it goes away. And for some unknown reason, I'm trapped having to listen to this for 8, 10, 15 minutes. I can't believe I sit there, and as soon as I get out of bed, it goes away. So mine ends the second my feet hit the ground, and I'm functioning and all of that. That's the only vulnerability I seem to have is sleeping that allows my ego to gang up on me. In the morning, I do like to, and it hurts like heck to get down on my knees, but I do like the sense of surrender that conveys. I really like the Muslim getting all the way down. I mean, that is what a position of surrender. When I could stretch better and do those stretching routines, I really like that sense that I was close to God. I turned my life over. I mean, it really had a very powerful symbolism to me that I was turning it over. It was mostly symbolic, but I felt it. So I don't know if that's of use to anybody. Then I have spiritual readings, and I try to have some spiritual thoughts about people in the program, and then I'm ready for receiving interesting spiritual thoughts. And I wait for them all day, and if I hear something at a meeting, I write it down, and I collect them, and it's just so exciting every day to see some other idea revealed, and makes my day. People at Yana see me writing all the time. I hear somebody say, oh, I know it. And then it ends up in some weird story at a men's weekend. On page 98, it says, the minute we put our work on a service plane, the alcoholic commences to rely upon our assistance rather than upon God. The alcoholic commences to rely upon our assistance upon God. It seems a contradiction to be of service, but don't put your work on a service plane. I think, as a matter of fact, I don't remember this. And I don't remember the context. But most alcoholics start out putting their trust in their sponsor, then their home group, and eventually in God. And when they put it in that order, they generally end up putting it in the hands of a different God than the one they knew as a kid. It becomes a new experience, even though they may call it by the same name. And so I don't know if that answered the question but don't put your work on a service plane. If anybody has a better answer, see me at the end and I'll bring it up tomorrow. I realize that's not answering the question, but I'm not going to try and make one up. I'd have to see the, I just, that means, because it does look contradictory. So let me look at it, or let Dick Anderson come up and whisper in my ear. How do I tell what is God's will and what is my will? Ask someone else. How do I do it without asking someone else? You can't. It's so important to realize that running things by, and to me, that's it. It's guaranteed. It really cuts through the ability of the ego to impersonate God, which he likes to do. And what does Bill say? The most errant nonsense. The guidance will be the most errant nonsense that we get. Wow, we're getting there. I don't think I will make it. Why do I feel my capacity to love has limitations? I think that's very normal to have that feeling, but we should be grateful that we even have the beginning of that, the capacity to love, that we have recognized that we even have it, because that's a huge step forward. Because that tells you that your basic nature is love, and you're finally getting in contact with it. And as you get in contact with it, you haven't opened it fully, so it seems like it might be limited. But as time goes on and you finish all the steps, and as St. Francis puts it, make me a channel of thy love, we realize our capacity to love is covered by the size of the channel. And it can get restricted or choked up with fear, resentments, or any of those things. It does not mean that the supply of love has suddenly shrunk, but rather the capacity to flow through us has been restricted by our self-centeredness or whatever it is. So as we clear the channel, you find that your capacity to love is unlimited, and you're going to be delighted to experience that. Bill W. says in our literature that speaking of service and living by spiritual principles, we first do these things because we must live, then we do these things because we know they are right, and then we do these things because we love them. Oh my God, is that beautiful? It seems to me that we reach different levels of awareness in our recovery. Could you expand on this? On different levels of awareness, you better believe it. That's the point of this weekend, is to make sure you do not stay at the level you're at, because you'll be cheating yourself out of so much more. To increase awareness, I mean, that's what our whole 11th step is all about. Improve our conscious contact is to increase our awareness until we're just totally God conscious, totally God guided, and you suddenly realize that that was really the whole purpose of life, and all the rest of this stuff is incidental. In that level of awareness, you will do nothing but spread love and teach others how to do this. So increasing levels of awareness is the most exciting thing that can happen. Why aren't we all doing it? And that was what Natcher was talking about, and what I was talking about when I gave the story about there's one meeting a week and you had to pray a lot, and now there's all this tremendous support structure and you don't have to hardly pray at all. And Bill called it that through this great support structure that we have, you can have good to very good sobriety. And very good and good is the biggest enemy of the best that there is, because there's no urgency to move on. And you end up spending the next 30 years 80% as happy as you could have been. And that's a tragedy. Sounds pretty good, doesn't it? Now, I was pretty happy most of the time. Now, see, when you come in and you're miserable, that sounds pretty good. But if you've been around a while, you do not want to settle for that. You don't want to settle for pretty good sobriety when you could have the best. And that is an individual adventure. The system will give you good. You have to go get the best. Actually, there's only one more after this. Will I get an awakening from going to lots of meetings and doing lots of service work? No. Can you take that off the tape, please? You want an awakening? Go to Towns Hospital. There, that's the end of that. Bill hadn't done anything. He just sat on the bed and, well, if there is a God, he would show himself. Okay. Boom. What do we say about going to meet and doing a lot of service work? Nothing ensures immunity from drinking like helping other alcoholics. Immunity from drinking. That isn't spiritual awakening. So we do that and take greatest satisfaction out of it, and we're driven into doing that in order to stay sober. That's what that sentence says. Nothing ensures immunity from drinking, so we don't want to drink, so we go get involved in service. Nothing wrong with that, but there's something at another level. We seek an awakening by working the steps. And we haven't even gotten to the 12th step, carrying the message to other people, when we have, at the end of the 9th step, the connection with God. We suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves, which is an awakening. Out of an awakening comes the irresistible urge to pass it on. And now we're going to go help the next alcoholic, not to stay sober, but because it's fun and free. The joy of helping someone. It is such a free gift. It just flows out of us. There isn't even any selfish part. Well, I'm glad I'm doing this because it'll keep me sober. That's in the past. Now I'm doing it because it's so much fun. You couldn't talk me out of doing this. We couldn't get Dick away from the jail work if we put handcuffs on him. He'd find a way to get in there because he loves it so much. It's just, oh boy. Sure, in the beginning he might have been doing it to stay sober, but now he's doing it because he can't help doing it. He has to. It's part of his nature, and it's fun and fun and fun. So there's two dimensions to service. And I hope I covered them. All right. Well, that still leaves one with a half a page. Moving past deep resentment and fear. I don't know was there something in addition to this? I don't know who wrote this. Moving past deep resentment and fear. Well, you could get into deeper resentment. I'm sorry. Maybe I missed. If you know the rest of this, whisper it in my ear and I'll answer it tomorrow. We're down to the last one. Oh, no. Okay. How do we handle women abusers in our groups? I guess 13 stepping has been around. I really think that there's a failure of sponsorship here. That's where I would see it. I mean, a good sponsor would, this would be over in a heartbeat. And it would be done in the proper way. One on one and not in front of anybody. Not in public. Not embarrassing somebody in front of the whole group. Not calling them out. And that kind of thing. In the Marine Corps, we called it, we praise in public and chastise in private. And I really believe that's a good lesson. And so, if it moves you to have a one-on-one, and you feel that it can be done out of love and will be received out of love, it might be attempted. But I certainly think it has to be one-on-one, that it can never be done in front of the whole group. That would be terrible, terrible thing. How do we get rid of wanting to chase the women when they come in? I thought old age would take care of that. But I see Dick groping every newcomer that comes. And Lee exercising total self-restraint. So I'll tell you, that'll remain the mystery in AA for hundreds of years. What do we do about the women problem? And and I think that God put it there for a reason, so it must be okay. We're at the end of the time. I want to thank you for the most brilliant questions. I really was impressed, and I hope it was of benefit to everybody. Thank you, and we start now. Yeah, round of applause. Chris, we'll give it a...